When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sonically, I hadn't really heard anything like that before. It was this weird cacophony of like strange alarms and sounds. And
hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Accolades Conversation series, in which I talk to some of my favorite artists about who or what they would recommend me checking out. Make sure to subscribe to our channel or hit the like button. This episode is in collaboration with Sonic City Festival, a three-day curated festival in Kortrijk, Belgium from the 11th till the 13th of November, organized by Wel de Westen. This year's edition is curated by Low, Black Country New Roads, and Gilla Band. Some other bands already added to the lineup are Goat, Dry Cleaning, Coco, La Fille d'Elegadat, and the musician you'll hear me talk to, Billy Nomates. Check out the lineup on soniccity.be, where more names will be added soon. Tor Maris, who performs as Billy Nomates, is a solo British songwriter and musician who now lives in Bristol, England. She released her self-titled debut album in 2020 and featured on Mork and Mindy by Sleaford Mods in 2021. She released the Emergency Telephone EP in October 2021, produced by herself on Geoff Barrow's label Invada Records. BBC Radio 6 music DJ Amy LeMay chose Billy Nomates' debut as her album of the year in 2020. I spoke to Tor about BC Camplight, born Brian Cristinzio, an American songwriter and multi-instrumentalist. His 2005 album Hide Run Away was released by One Little Indian and featured Cynthia G. Mason on vocals. Camplight's follow-up, Blink of a Nihilist, was released in 2007. The third album came out in January 2015 on Bella Union. Cristinzio's later lyrics regularly explored his personal life and self-destructive tendencies, including struggles with depression and alcohol. If you are into my illustrations, this Accolade series started as an illustration book, which you can still get on our website, greatrecords.be. This is what Tor had to add.
I had a good think about this, and there's always like, there's so many people, isn't there, like that kind of shape your thoughts and ideas, and you feel like have been really influential, that just don't seem to pierce through like a mainstream avenue. But I've actually gone for BC Camplight. Have you heard of him?
No.
Okay, great. Yeah, so BC Camplight is the musical project of a guy called Brian Cristinzio. I think that's how I pronounce Cristinzio. Brian Cristinzio, there we go. He's actually an American songwriter, but he lives here in the UK. He lives in Manchester, England. I think he started making records in the US, and he was doing, I think, okay. I think he was a session piano player for Sharon Van Etten. Van Etten? Okay, I'm so sorry. Terrible with pronouncing. I'm so dyslexic, so I'm going to say everyone's names wrong. Offend everybody. And I, hand on heart, do not mean it. But yeah, so he was a session player, I think, on a few people's records. I think he played with The War on Drugs, I read somewhere. Anyway, he's an incredible pianist, but he's also a really interesting songwriter. The first album that I was aware of from BC Camplight was a record called How to Die in the North, which came out on Bella Union, which is, I think, a UK-based label. And it had a song on it called I'm Desperate. And sonically, I hadn't really heard anything like that before. It was this weird cacophony of like strange alarms and sounds, and everything felt a bit on the edge. And musically, the production of it, I found just, and still do find, so interesting. Because for a song that's titled I'm Desperate, it really like throws you over the edge, you know. And I was sort of fascinated by that. He had a record after How to Die in the North called Deportation Blues, which is actually based around the fact that he I read, and I know Brian, not personally, but we speak occasionally as artists that are aware of each other. And I know that Deportation Blues is actually based upon the fact that after How to Die in the North did really well, and he was starting to get notable recognition, and he was getting offers for TV and things were going well, he had a leg injury and he ended up being deported back from England to America. I sensed that he kind of missed a lot of these opportunities that he'd been working on, and then ends up writing Deportation Blues, which is an amazing album. and based on truth, you know, which I think the best albums are. And then skipping ahead, so this is just kind of the albums, like chronologically, I guess, but skipping ahead to where I had really honed into what he was doing and why I started to really appreciate him, was a record that came out in 2020, which I have a real affinity with Brian, because I also put my record out in 2020. And I think anyone that did that, we all have this shared trauma from it. And
I started a record shop in 2020, so.
Right, so you understand what we're saying. Like, yeah. We went out on a limb, we did this, and it was quite ride or die, the whole thing. But Brian really captured my imagination and kind of my heart with a record called Shortly After Takeoff, which came out April 2020. I think it came out at the absolute pinnacle of everything going terribly wrong and being really serious and scary, actually, in the UK for a long time. It probably was the same across the world, wasn't it? Because I'm about to release a record next year, and I've only ever released records in a pandemic. My entire professional career is pandemic operations. So I've no idea how it actually goes. So Brian puts this record out right at the beginning of, like, this, the real severity of lockdown. Like, we're in back in April 2020, especially in the UK, it was quite scary. Like, we still didn't know anything about this virus, and the whole thing felt quite apocalyptic for a long time. And I think Brian writes apocalyptically better than any writer I know. And Shortly After Takeoff is kind of all about, it just had such a, for me, this real lush, dark tone to it. And the production choices on it are also very, he makes some brilliant decisions with things, you know, like his instrumentation. He operates with a full band, but his production is, and I think he does produce all of his records. In fact, I'm pretty sure he does. And his choices are just so interesting, because he will just throw an instrument in there, and you go, I don't know what that is. You know, I have no idea what that instrument is, but it sounds great. And he'll do it in a succession. So, like, you can listen to a song and you really don't know what's going to come next. And that really excites me, because I find that really, like, you know, that really fires you up as a songwriter, that someone's kind of put that level of detail and thought into something. And he'll do things where, like, you know, he always, for me, gives me a sense of, like, teetering over the edge. Like, he makes some of his songs have, like, a nauseous quality to them in a really good way. Like, he has these kind of, like, effects that feel like dipping aeroplanes, like almost like when you're on a ride or a plane and, like, it suddenly dips or goes down. Like, sonically, he manages to do that. And I find that just, like, yeah, I love that. And so Shortly After Takeoff, I mean, it's just, and the reason I want to speak about it is because it did do really well here in the UK. People do talk about it.
Is he already back in the UK, or is he living in Europe?
Yeah, I think he is. I know he went back to the States at some point this year, but I think he's coming back. Mm-hmm. And I know that he's got a record coming out next year. And I also know it's a really hard time to be a band. I hope that he can navigate all of that and continue to play live, and because it's really difficult for bands in the UK.
Your career going in the beginning of the pandemic, Does that mean like you had a lot of live shows that were postponed and stuff like that? And like,
I'm still playing out a lot of my 2020 shows now, you know, which feels a bit odd because that's 2 years ago and the material that was written a year before that. So it's that's just the whole part of life that got frozen. Mm-hmm. So to kind of go out and do it. I mean, the more I've done it this year, I've got into it. But to begin with, I really disliked it.
Are you scheduling yourself around that timing of like, I have to tour before I make new music? Or were you working on new music in the meantime?
Kind of had 2 feet in both camps, really, which I was fortunate enough to be able to do. I was kind of dipping in and out, which again, I don't know. I mean, it was strange because your head is trying to figure out this new dynamic or this kind of new direction, and you're living out these things that should have happened.
But does that mean that the reactions to your album were coming in positive, but you still didn't know how people were actually reacting because you haven't been in front of like audiences?
Absolutely. It still happens now. Like, it's odd because, it was like a 2 year freeze where people were sat with the album. And I put an EP out as well, so sat with this material. And then like the first time, I mean, I only really went to Europe this year, actually. I only really did a few European shows this year. And I'd done a couple of festivals and people are at the front and they know the words and it absolutely blows my mind. It's super cool, but I end up feeling quite suspicious because I'm like, how do you know it though? Like, I've never been here, you don't know me. Like, and that's the power of music, I guess. You know?
Yeah.
That is an interesting one. But you know, some things work at shows and some things don't. And it's not until you truly have an audience and you're in a different venue every night that you get to know that. So,
but if I get it right, after your album was released, I mean, you had singles, obviously, but like did you know which songs were gonna work? And was it a surprise when you started doing the live shows to see if other songs were working better or not?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because the way I operate live is like I have a very minimal setup. I operate with a lot of playback and then a vocal kind of, and then quite physical performance. So in terms of sort of rehearsing how the performance would look, that never really happened. I kind of just went out and did it. And in some ways, I think it's actually worked in my favor because it's a very... For me, it feels like a very natural show that just kind of happened. It's not choreographed in any way. It's not massively curated in any way. It just kind of happens and it kind of ends up just being what it is. And I hope that kind of resonates with the audience. But I think I was interested by songs like Call In Sick that I never really paid a lot of attention to. I just thought it was just an album song, which I think, you know, in 2020 becomes like, I mean, who the hell writes a song about a virus taking down your workplace at that time? I mean, it was just an absolutely insane thing that happened. Because obviously I wrote that in 2019 when the world was like, okay. But...
Before the pandemic, were you already like a full-time musician, or did that happen during the pandemic?
It kind of happened during the pandemic through accident, in all honesty, because I was working. I worked at a small marketing department, basically just doing kind of like office work. And before that, I was just working in shoe shops and anything. I've had so many different jobs. And so what happened was is that I was living in a student house working for quite low down in a university. And it kind of just all collapsed at once. Like, they shut, they closed, they couldn't afford to furlough me because I was only so many hours. And so I kind of just ended up, and I had the album. And so I was kind of, the hope was that I'd put the album out and be like, bye-bye work, I'm finished. But what actually happened was I kind of lost my job, put the album out, and then was like, well, shit, I better make this work then.
Well, you were kind of pushed in like a scary situation by accident in some way, which is maybe like the best way for it to happen, like instead of like having to make that choice and maybe end up with nothing. So, you know.
Totally, because like it felt a bit, it's a bit risky to do that on an album where nobody knows you. Like, I don't think anyone does that, you know, if they don't need to or don't have to. So then it kind of ended up just being like, okay, well, let's just, and I was like, full transparency, I was fortunate that I moved back into my dad's house around that time, because obviously I wasn't able to pay rent and things, and you know, and I was 30 years old and I'd lived independently since I was 50.
Let's hope by the time that you play in Belgium in November that everything is still the way it is, so you know.
Isn't that crazy? It's like we're not even hoping that it gets better, we just need it to not get worse.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's not exactly good like now, and I think that's a crazy, yeah, I find that a crazy disposition of modern life now, is that we just hope that like the day rolls out and that actually that's the best. That's all we can do, isn't it? It's just have a little bit of hope, else we wouldn't do anything. Like, yeah.
I want to thank Billy Nomates for this interview. Again, Sonic City from the 11th till the 13th of November in the Bar Kortrijk, organized by Wilde Westen. You can get your tickets on soniccity.be. Next week, I'm talking about Canadian rapper Chaos with Shad, who you might recognize from the Netflix documentary Hip Hop Evolution. Check it out, and thanks for listening.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.